All right, we're going to start the meeting. We don't have a quorum yet, but we're going to start on time. The first item on our agenda is a roll call. If Ms. Bott will note the roll, the next thing is approval of minutes, which we'll have to hold until we get one more member in the room. There was a spreadsheet that was passed out in your packets. It's also available to the members of the audience. What we did is we delineated each individual worksheet. Those are the columns numbered 1 through 10. And then the next column where it says number no votes, those are the people that wrote no funding for those items. And then we tallied the number of yes votes. As you can see, they fell into three basic categories, high, medium, and low priority, given the number of people that put funding towards those items. And then the overall dollar average was the average of the committee in making recommendations in those particular funding areas. Unfortunately, as you can see at the bottom far right-hand column, our total is $99,504,000, so somebody didn't spend all of their $100 million, and lucky they don't have a name on their sheet because I couldn't give them a red check. So that person shall forever remain anonymous, but that's why our committee recommendations aren't equal to $100 million. Are there any questions on that? Seeing none, these recommendations will be brought to the Capital Investment Committee this afternoon. Their meeting starts at 2:30 in room 200. We are fourth on the agenda, so I'm assuming that we'll be at least an hour into the meeting before the transportation issues will be brought to that committee, and certainly any committee members that would like to attend, we'd be happy to have you there. The next item, just a housekeeping thing. Tomorrow we are going to have a joint meeting with Transportation Policy at 2:30 in this room, and we will, as a the bill is actually in Transportation Finance, and we're going to hear about the street utility fee issue. Representative Earhart has joined the room. We now have six members, so I will officially call the meeting to order. And Representative Leader moves approval of the minutes from February 1st and February 3rd. Are there any questions or additions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. The next item on our agenda is House File 276, Representative Magnus. Representative Magnus has to attend the Rules Committee at 1 o'clock.
2 o'clock.
2 o'clock. Okay. Oh, you got plenty of time. We're going to have you out of here.
Take that long, I'll just go.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move House File 276. Madam Chair and members, I appreciate the hearing on this bill. This is a somewhat familiar occurrence to many of us on the Transportation Committees, Madam Chair and members. I would refer you to a couple of the handouts you've got in your packets. The first one I'll talk off of is the House Research Bill Summary put together by analyst John Williams. Thank you, John, for doing this. Basically, it's a short summary of the bill. It directs the Department, MnDOT, to develop and implement a town road sign replacement program to inventory all the county and town roads signs, evaluate town road signs for compliance with all the applicable standards, remove and replace town road signs as the department deems necessary, and establish an ongoing sign maintenance program. Our appropriation request, Madam Chair and members, is for $6 million from the general fund for this program. I would also point out another piece of information in your packets, titled Road Sign, Town Road Hazard Sign Inspection and Replacement Program, to review that. And also in your packets is the transportation issues for the Minnesota Association of Townships. And with me, Madam Chair, this morning, and members, I have David Frick, with the Minnesota Association of Townships to give further testimony on my bill.
Thank you. And if I might, committee members, you do not have the township colored document. My understanding is it was passed out at policy. And Mr. Furke, if you would make sure that the members of our committee, we do have extra copies if anybody would like to have a copy now, but also Representatives Abrams, Magnus, and Hausman are not on policy but are on this committee. So,
We put a copy in their packets, I believe.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
And I do have extras here, too, but thanks to the staff. Really appreciate the opportunity. This has kind of been an ongoing thing for a number of years for the Township Association.
And if you'll state your name for the tape, please.
Dave Fricke. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Association of Townships.
Thank you.
Back in the late 80s, 86, 87, the Township Association, working with MnDOT and with the way the federal dollars worked back then, we had excess money at the end of the year and were able to go back in and get some grant funds. And the last piece on that one handout that you have is an award that we were given to our state relative to this type of program for the how we did it. And I guess the key here is that we believe that because we did this program and are continuing to try to do it and do an updated fashion of it from past, that we did save a lot of lives. We put up over 140,000 signs on the township road system when we initially did the work. It was kind of before we had all the computerized systems. But in any case, the summary is pretty brief here as to what the bill does. The amount of money that's in here would cover us for quite a bit of the state. Part of the idea of getting the bill on the table here today is that we are also have been working with Congress for a number of years trying to get additional funding. As you know, the update to the T21 federal funding program is not complete. As of yesterday, in talking to some people from Washington, they thought we might have a conference committee come May. And with this issue on the table here that we've passed through, in essence, both the House and the Senate previously, the idea to keep it alive and to present it to our congressional leadership is really important in order that we might be able to see some federal dollars come down, that whatever we would put in to help supplement that and to initiate, if nothing else, to initiate a pilot program to get this on the table and get it working, and so that eventually that the state could be covered again and all of the hazard signs updated and the standards met. And you know, MnDOT's been working with us on this as well, and if you have some questions, be happy to try and answer it. But it's been a good program, and I think it's saved a lot of lives in our state.
All right, thank you. Representative Magnus, is there anybody else that's here to testify on your bill?
Christopher David. I don't believe so.
So we have other members in the audience, Madam Chair, but I don't think I want
some moral support, I think.
I think so.
All righty.
Is there any questions?
Great, thank you. Our committee members, are there any questions of the bill author, Mr. Fricke? Pretty straightforward, I guess. We're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the transportation omnibus bill. And, gentlemen, I appreciate your time before the committee today.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank the Chair very much for your consideration. Thank you.
The next item on our agenda is the MnDOT operating budget continued, and according to my information, Mr. Steer will be next. And if, gentlemen, if you might give us the page reference in our budget book so that we can follow along with your presentation. Representative Hausman.
My apologies for being late, but I know you've already approved the minutes, but I was shown as not present at the February 3rd.
Okay, we will fix that. So noted, and we'll amend that. Thank you for your sharp eye. Welcome to the committee, gentlemen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kevin Gray, Chief Financial Officer for MnDOT. And we will be covering the balance of the MnDOT budget today. Specifically, we'll be focusing on our state roads program, which includes three principal budget activities and really is about managing the entire trunk highway system. These activities include our infrastructure investment and planning, which includes the construction program, our infrastructure operations and maintenance, and electronic communications. The last activity, electronic communications, was covered separately, so we'll be focusing on the two big pieces under investment planning and operations and maintenance. In addition, we'll also be giving an overview of our local roads program. We'll provide some background about each of the program activities, budget activities, and also any change recommendations from the governor as part of our discussion. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Dick Stair to cover the infrastructure investment and planning, and he'll also cite the page number so we can keep track, please.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Gray. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Stair.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Dick Stair. I'm Director of Engineering Services Division at MnDOT. The infrastructure and investment planning activity that I'm going to be covering, the narrative for that begins on page 37 of the budget document. This activity encompasses the highway construction functions as well as the statewide planning, programming, research, and project development functions of MnDOT. The strategic planning and statewide planning functions were presented previously by Randy Halverson in the department overview, and that's shown as the first slide. A question was raised at that time about how projects get into the program, and I want to spend some of my time explaining the project development process and how that leads to projects getting into the long-range plan, the short-range 10-year work program, and the STIP. Those activities are in the gray box to the right of the dashed line on this first slide. We have a mature system of highways in the state. There are very few new roads have been built since the completion of the interstate. And projects are almost all reconstruction or expansion of existing roads. Roads go through a life cycle analysis, and that's shown in your second slide. Our roadways are monitored for performance, and as they go through maintenance and operations, they gradually begin to deteriorate from traffic and from weathering and environmental factors. They also start approaching some of the other performance measures, targets that would lead us to include them in a long-range program. The performance measures, key performance measures for these roads are on the bottom of page 37 and page 38. And they include key indicators like travel speed on the interregional corridors, the duration and extent of congestion on metro freeways, crash data and fatality and injury data that give us an indication of the safety of those roadways, ride quality or roughness, and pavement serviceability, which has to do with distresses in the pavement, cracks and things like that that are caused by traffic and the environment, and bridge condition. If in the monitoring of these roadways, key structural components of the roadways start to approach our target values in our long-range planning process, they get included in the 20-year plan. We do projections of those performance targets, and we can, through our modeling process, predict when the pavement's going to deteriorate or when a bridge will need reach a condition where it needs to be reconstructed. During the maintenance and operations cycle, MnDOT performs various preventive maintenance activities to extend the service life of the roads and bridges. We'll put seals on the roadway. We will maintain the bearings and joints of bridges to prolong their life. But as the roadway segment deteriorates, it moves up in priority until a district places it in its 10-year plan. And at that time, project development may start to determine more specifically the scope and to refine the costs and timing of repairs or improvements to the segment of roadway. Finally, the project gets into design, and it's let for construction, and then the maintenance and operations and monitoring begin again. This diagram shows a more detailed breakdown of the project development process. It's really a discovery process to determine what exactly needs to be done. It begins with the scoping activity, and that activity collects information on the travel speed, condition of bridges, crash history, pavement condition, culverts, all the information that would go into determining just how big this project needs to be and what needs to be done to the roadway. And this results in revisions to the cost estimates, a better estimate of the timing when the project has to be done, and decisions on what process is going to be used to develop the project further. The next step is environmental documentation. And that can vary dramatically based on the size or scope of the project. If it's a major construction project where we're looking at adding lanes and replacing bridges and probably looking at alignment alternatives, we may need to do an environmental impact statement or an environmental assessment. And that kind of a process can take 2 to 4 years. In that process, we work with the communities and the permitting agencies to work through a range of alternatives, looking at new alignments, number of lanes, whether we're going to use signals or grade separations, to assess the impacts on the environment and the community, to look at the costs of alternatives, to look at historic and cultural impacts, possible encounter of endangered species, special resources that need to be considered, like fens or wetlands or trout streams or impaired waters. All of that gets assessed in the environmental document, and the decision is made on a preferred alternative. If it's a smaller kind of project, merely a pavement replacement or overlay, we can oftentimes get by with a project development report that cites the scope of the work to be involved and the minimal environmental impact that it's going to have. And then work in a more informal way with the local units of government on how traffic will be handled and things like that during the project. And that kind of a project development report may only take a few months. The next step is then construction limits. We go through additional discovery. On a major project, we'll be doing aerial surveys, soil borings, looking at the road history, starting to assemble data on property ownership, doing historical property investigations, wetland inventories, beginning the discussions with other agencies about permits, the DNR, the Pollution Control Agency, the State Historic Preservation Office, Corps of Engineers, watershed districts, municipal agreements, that kind of thing will begin during that construction limits process. We'll also be looking at utilities, private and public, doing noise analysis, exploring for contaminated properties. So it's a very intense investigation of the exact details that will go into the project. And as this further discovery takes place, again, it may lead to revised costs and revised schedules. It may lead us to determine that the project has to be accelerated because the condition of the road is deteriorating faster than we thought, or that it has to be delayed because we have to go through additional steps in the environmental process. The next step takes us to plan delivery, where we start putting together the detailed set of plans that the contractor is going to use for the project. We develop detailed plans and quantities, the specifications, any special constraints or directions that have to go to the bidders. We continue the approvals process. We begin agreements with local units of government on cost participation and start the utility relocations. Also during this time, we begin the right-of-way acquisition process, which can take 14 to 17 months. And we have a broad array of kinds of right-of-way issues that need to be settled. Some of them are minimum damage assessments, where we're only taking a small sliver of land, temporary construction permits, where we'll just be changing the slope or surface of some of the land, partial takes, total relocations, or full acquisitions of businesses and homes. Once the plan delivery, we've got a final set of plans and specifications and details to the contractor for them to bid on, and we have the right-of-way in hand, we let the contract to the lowest bidder using our design bid build process. In design build, we would start back here with the construction limits and let the contract and let the contractor do the final design and plan delivery. Once the project has been let, we move across that orange line into the post-letting period, and our activities include inspection of materials. It includes looking at samples of the steel that's brought to the job to make sure everything meets the requirements, the samples of the concrete being used. We look at the pavement quality as the contractor puts it down, make sure they're building it to the right dimensions, make sure that the concrete strength that we're specifying gets achieved. We do a lot of lab work on the materials, sending to our labs to do lab testing. We also do oversight on the project to make sure that if hazardous materials or contaminated soils are encountered, that they're disposed of according to the plans and specifications. And we negotiate with the contractor the costs of changing conditions. If we thought there was a small area of contaminated soils and it turns out to be a much larger area when we actually start excavating, or if we think that there's a small area of poor soils and it turns out to be a large area, we have to negotiate with the contractor then these changing conditions and claims.
Mr. Sterry, there's a question for you. Representative Earhart.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. I was just wondering, when you have a design build program, how do you put constraints on your monies that can be spent, as you would probably do on the old style of bid levying and so forth?
Mr. Sterry.
And Chair, Representative Earhart, in design build, it is a lump sum build by bid by the contractor. And we make progress payments as the contractor makes progress toward finishing the completion of that. The contractor is responsible for the design. So the payments are made based on a percent of the total contract that has been accomplished up to the maximum allowed by the lump sum bid.
All right. Please continue.
So during this construction oversight, we're making sure that all the permits and everything are complied with by the contractor and then approving for payment the progress of the contractor. Once the construction is finished, we then go into maintenance operations and we can continue in that life cycle of the pavement, looking at monitoring, looking at the best timing for preventive maintenance activities that will prolong the life and reduce the life cycle cost to the roadway. All of these functions fall within the infrastructure investment and planning budget activity that's described on page 37 and 38. The budget for the infrastructure investment planning activity is summarized on page 39. It includes the governor's recommendation for debt service for bonds and buildings of $474,000 in 2006 and $2,834,000 in 2007. Page 10 of the governor's recommendation describes the decrease in the state road construction program of $133,500,000 in 2006 and $29,500,000 in 2007. This change is to match our current plans for construction and a small increase for infrastructure operations and maintenance that Mr. Winter will talk to you about. It reflects delays in federal funding due to delays in passing the new Transportation Act. Madam Chair, that completes my overview of the infrastructure investment and planning activity.
Are there any additional questions for Mr. Stewart? Right, thank you very much. I believe Mr. Winter is next. Is that correct, Mr. Gray?
Yes, that is, and he will cover infrastructure operations and maintenance, that budget activity.
Right, thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Winter.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bob Winter. I'm the Director of District Operations, and I have to apologize for a little bit of a raspy voice today. Today I'm going to address the State Roads Program, Infrastructure Operations, and Maintenance Activity. You can find those starting on page 40 in your budget books. this activity, very simply stated, is provides the personnel, the equipment, and the materials necessary to maintain, operate, and preserve the state's trunk highway and interstate highway system. And some of the details of that are noted in the little box to the right-hand side of that page. We have about 12,000 centerline miles of trunk highway, a little over 1,000 buildings that we own and take care of, about 2,000 traffic management systems, signals, closed-circuit television, changeable message signs, things of that nature, and about 4,700 trunk highway bridges across the state of Minnesota. The population that we serve are essentially all the citizens of the state of Minnesota. The infrastructure, operations, and maintenance activity includes seven products and services that are start to be listed on the bottom of page 40. The first one is smooth roads, which has to do with our pavement condition, drainage, and shoulders along those roadways. And our objective there, of course, is to ensure a smooth ride for the roadway users. The second product and service is clear roads. This covers primarily snow and ice removal on our system, as well as some debris removal and other roadway obstruction removal. The third product is traffic management, which also includes safety activities. So that has signing, lighting, striping, guardrail repair, our traffic management centers across the state, traveler information systems that we also operate to provide information to motorists. Fourth area is roadsides. This includes the spraying, mowing of noxious weed control, litter pickup, things of that nature. Fifth area is bridges, and this product is primarily bridge inspection activities and goes normal and emergency repairs on bridges to keep them safe and serviceable. Sixth area are regulations. That's the permits that we issue and providing safe routing for wide and overweight truck loads. And then the seventh and last area is our fleet facility management and inventory control that provides the equipment, the buildings, and our procurement processes and our inventory management systems.
Thank you. Excuse me, Mr. Winter. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Mr. Winter, I see in the governor's budget proposal he's increasing fees for permits. Is that going to highway budget or is that going to general fund?
Mr. Winter or Mr. Gray?
I don't think, Madam Chair and Representative Leader, I don't believe that includes the permits that MnDOT issues. Those, as far as I know, are other permits, not the permits that MnDOT issues, to the best of my knowledge.
Representative Leader, are you maybe speaking about the fees on driver's licenses and inspection, salvage, that whole sheet of paper? Is that maybe what you're referring to?
Madam Chair, that's correct. I think I've read somewhere in it related. I was sure to highways.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Gray?
Yes, on the driver's license fees and other areas that there have been some proposed increases, they do flow into a special revenue fund through the Trunk Highway Fund. A majority of that is appropriated to driver and vehicle services. So we receive the revenues and the appropriation or the expenditure goes back out. There is a net balance that remains in the Trunk Highway Fund of a modest amount. I believe the governor's recommendation is to not to make that whole from past history, but the additional fees will not stay in the Trunk Highway Fund. They will go with the driver vehicle services proposal. I think they're proposing to set up a special revenue account of their own so that they can manage their own operation.
Representative Weider, we're going to have DVS here on Thursday, and they participated in quite an extensive exercise with, I believe, 3M, that did an evaluation of the cost of delivering services, and they're going to have some interesting information for us relative to some of these fee increases that the governor is proposing.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I realize these have been going into DPS, but I think I read, I'll have to check my thing. I thought there's some other permits that were raising the permit fees, I thought related to even as far as overloads or with permits or some of those that are going to be increased.
We'll be sure to get your questions answered, and maybe if you want to have a discussion with myself or Mr. Walls afterwards, we'll try and make sure that we get your concerns addressed when we identify which fees that you're concerned about. Okay, Mr. Winter.
Thank you. To continue, you've had presentations earlier this session on the department's performance measures. Many of those performance measures applies only to the capital side of our program. Some apply to both the capital and the operating side of our program, and some apply just to the operations maintenance side of our program. So I'd like to highlight a few of those that really come to play in our maintenance and operations activities. Of course, one of our key areas of concern and measures that we monitor and manage around constantly is safety. Crash rates, high crash locations, and fatalities are of particular interest, and our interest, of course, is in reducing all those all across the system through either capital investments or maintenance and operations activities. Another area is smooth roads. Of course, this is a product that our customers tell us is very important to them, so we do the best we can to maintain smooth pavements out there to provide customer service. Also, more from our end of the smooth road is we're very interested in the physical structural condition of the roadway. That helps us make decisions about the kinds of repairs we make and when it's time to replace or resurface certain roadways. Of course, clear roads and traffic management is one of our primary products. Snow and ice removal, hours to bare lanes, and many of those safety features that we provide out there along the road under traffic management, such as pavement markings and signing. Visibility is the key to that product.
Excuse me, Mr. Winter. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Minister. On the smooth roads category, I've been asked repeatedly, Mr. Winter, who's in charge of making sure the roads are smooth between Minneapolis and St. Paul on 94? Because it's anything but smooth, and there's a problem with pavement buckling or something that's been going on for a long time. So if you give me the name of the person that's in charge of keeping that road smooth, I'd be happy to call him.
Mr. Winter.
Madam Chair and Representative Earhart, that's a road that has a long and colorful history, I guess we could say. Our management technique for that road is to periodically go in and do a complete repair of the pavement surface. A mill and overlay is the way we've been managing that over the last several cycles. There are some underlying structural issues and problems that are reflecting up to making the ride deteriorate over time. But for the time being, until we can develop a program to completely reconstruct and replace that pavement and make a lot of the other access kinds of modifications and revisions to that, at least our intention is to continue that cycle of just resurfacing that roadway. And it sounds like from your comments, maybe we're rapidly approaching the time to look at that again.
Sure. It's the periodic expansion up into the way of your car. You know, about every 30 yards it comes up like this, and then you run over it, and goes like that, you know, and the shocks get all knocked around. Is that structurally unsound, the base of that road, or what is
it? Mr. Winter.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, that could be a couple different things. without going into a long discussion on pavement types, there are probably some underlying structural conditions, maybe old, long-standing potholes that are reflecting back up through the pavement in other parts of the roadway. They could be the joints that, the natural joints that are in the roadway. There's a combination of both of those pavement designs on that particular stretch of roadway. Not all of it has joints, but I think as you get more to the St. Paul end, it is jointed pavement underneath, so those joints have deteriorated, continue to deteriorate and thrust up, particularly in the winter when you get the freeze-thaw cycles and the material tends to expand a little bit more, and you get that vaulting at those pavement joints reflects up through the pavement, and that's what results in a rough ride that you're observing.
Thank you.
Representative Hollisman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I recall a conversation we had a few years ago where we discussed the possibility of a cost-benefit analysis to build our roads to deeper standards. And, of course, we know the money problems there. But what if we focus on a roadway like that that over time has been problematic and say, we'll, we would set a priority to do that in one place to determine, to make some comparative studies?
Mr. Winter.
Some of the European standards, for example.
Madam Chair, Representative Haugen, we do a great deal of research in pavement types. We have a whole pavement research facility, the Minroad facility on 94 as you head up towards St. Cloud. And that's exactly the purpose. One of the purposes of that facility is to evaluate different pavement designs, including all the work that goes on below the pavement surface, how far down you do subcuts and the kind of material you put under roadways, as well as designs of roadway, the actual recipe, if you will, of the material, the kinds of materials that go into that, concrete, different kinds of aggregate that we have to deal with. So we're constantly in the process of evaluating and looking for better designs. Of course, lots of times it's very site-specific, again, depending upon what kind of underlying soils, water tables, and those kinds of situations that you encounter on whatever piece of geography that you happen to be looking at for roadway design. So it is an ongoing effort where I think we've made vast improvements in our roadway design over time. The 94 roadway that we're talking about was constructed probably in the mid-60s, so we've learned a lot more about roadway design and material since then, and we'd like to think anyway that we're doing a much better job on our newer roadways that we have the opportunity to reconstruct.
And Madam Chair, just to follow up, I hear design and materials. My understanding when we had that discussion was that in Europe the standards are to go deeper. And there was the belief that over time there was less maintenance. And that's the specific piece I'm wondering about.
Mr. Winter.
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, it really comes down to a life cycle cost and a cost-benefit analysis. And those are all the factors that you have to consider and evaluate. The kind of material you have in there, what's underlying the roadway at various depths, how much of that you should replace, how thick the actual paving section of the roadway should be, what kind of material it should be, concrete or bituminous are the two that we essentially use in for at least our high volume roadways. So it's a constant evolutionary process of doing cost benefit and life cycle analysis to maximize that.
Thank you. You'll continue.
Okay, moving on. I think we were talking about clear roads and traffic management. We're also very interested in incident and congestion, particularly incident management and congestion clearance, particularly critical in the Twin City metropolitan area. The last area then are bridges, and we're really concerned about bridge structural condition and looking at the things we need to do to maintain those bridges in safe and operating condition. We have performance targets and indicators. We've been gathering data for a number of years across all these many factors. We've been able to analyze that data. We've because we've gone through enough cycles, we can start to see some trends and trend lines, and that's the basis for our management of the system. So in order to act on our commitment to maintain and preserve the system, to more effectively manage the physical asset that we have out there, the very extensive physical asset that we have, and to minimize infrastructure life cycle costs, which is really what this is, what our efforts are all about, and to maximize the service life to the motoring public, we're right now in the process of developing what we call a highway systems operating plan. Now, the highway systems operating plan is kind of the operating and maintenance counterpart to our district long-range plan, which really focuses on our capital programs. This is a new effort for us, the first time that we've approached this on quite this systematic, strategically a manner, and we're able to do that because we do now have a very extensive history on performance targets and measures that is helping us to develop that plan. So based on our highway systems operating plan and the continued experience in gathering performance data and evaluating that data, this budget request is recommending the appropriation of $8.625 million per year to the state road operations and maintenance activity. This will be used to preserve the investment in bridges and pavements through increased preventive maintenance activities and to increase our investment for signing, lighting, guardrail materials, and repairs. I would also, just as a add-on to that, call your attention to this article that was recently published in the Governing Magazine, which evaluated MnDOT and many of our activities. Overall, it gave the state and MnDOT a pretty high rating, but one area that was highlighted was some of our maintenance activities, and it pointed out the importance, I think, of paying more attention up front in our project development and our budgeting process to the tails or the maintenance requirements as we go on, looking at appropriate funding levels for maintenance activities and more emphasis on preventive maintenance activities, which is a large part of the result of the highway systems operating plan that we're developing. So with that completes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Winter, looking at the overall scenario that you just presented, thinking ahead a little bit about the new toll lane that's going to go in on 394, is there going to be anything different about the road surface on that there? Do you have purview over that along with the other duties, or is that going to be something that's totally in a different department?
Mr. Winter.
Madam Chair, Representative Angus. Anderson, yes. I'm sorry. Yes, I'm familiar with that project. The majority of the construction activity that's going to go along with that project has been completed over last summer, particularly the pavement work that needed to be done. We did, a complete resurfacing of Interstate 394, including the high occupancy lane that will be operated as a high occupancy toll lane when the system is turned on later this spring. Over the winter, we've been installing some of the systems, the monitoring equipment, the overhead signs, and those kinds of activities. So the pavement surface that you see out there today, which is a bituminous surface, is the surface that will be in place for the operation of the high occupancy toll lane.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Mr. Winter, I have one on your narrative on page 42. You talk about your incident clearance time. Is the sole source of information for that your monitoring camera system? Does that camera system cover all of the roads, or how do you know when the incident started and ended and compute that factor?
And I'm sure a good part of that system is, yes, the camera system, which is, we have pretty extensive coverage, I think, over the vast majority of the system, particularly in the metropolitan area, much less, of course, in greater Minnesota, outstate Minnesota. We also have detectors in the roadways that can determine when queues are building or when traffic slows up. We have our first service, the the mobile trucks that are out there, particularly during rush hours, they're monitoring. The Highway Patrol, of course, which is out on the roadway during all hours, monitors and reports those incidents back to our traffic management center in the metropolitan area. But a good part of that coverage is provided by the cameras, yes, as you noted.
And so then for you to come up with this 37.3 minutes, is that just reported incidents, or do you, I mean, I'm wondering, does it reflect all incidents that are in the system, or that's not your intent, just the ones you see and reported? I mean, I'm assuming that there's a number of incidents that are fairly short.
Right.
That may not cause a backup, may not be seen on a camera. You're only dealing with incidents that cause problems with congestion, or
that's an average when we have observed incidents, which I think are the majority of the incidents that occur, particularly in the more, let's say, on and inside the I-94, 694 ring. Primarily, we have coverage outside of that, but that's primarily the area. So that's average over the incidents that we have observed over, that's probably based over a year's worth of data. And yes, they do vary extensively from very short to much longer than that in some cases, but the number you're seeing is an average.
All right. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. On that topic, have you been able to implement any contingencies related to the Highway Helper program? Because I wonder if that also contributed to that, you're off of your target by a couple of minutes. What kind of impact has that had, and do you have a sort of a contingency to, you know, deal with whatever services were rendered by that program that are no longer in play?
Mr. Winter.
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, essentially, the Highway Helper program is still in play. It has a new name now. It's FIRST, our Freeway Incident Response and Safety Team. But those vehicles are still out there on the road operating, and they are an important component, maybe not in detecting instances, but they certainly are critical in clearing those incidents when they do occur, and also in providing the safety for the rest of the motorists that are have to react to that incident when it occurs somewhere downstream from them.
So it's still in play, it's just called something
different. It has a different name. That's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional questions for Mr. Winter? Thank you. And I believe now we have the issue of local roads, is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct. Julie Skullman will be covering local roads, including the budget activities under county state aid roads and municipal state aid roads, and talk a little bit more about the role of her office in supporting our municipal and county roads as well as townships.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Skullman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I'm Julie Skullman. I'm the state aid engineer for MnDOT. I'm on page 49 of the book. Our responsibility in the local roads program is to supervise the distribution of both the county and the municipal state aid funds, as well as the federal funds that go to local agencies. In addition to that, we have some minor funding for other transportation systems. The town road and town bridge accounts come through our office, and the oversight activities for the local bridge replacement program as well. The major activity is page 51. It's the county state aids roads. That's 29% of the highway user tax distribution fund that's divided by our office to the 87 counties of Minnesota. It's used for both maintenance and construction of about 30,000 miles of road in Minnesota. The money that's spent in the rural areas is generally improved safety and structural capacity. It's for moving goods. In the metropolitan area, it's primarily safety and capacity improvements. It's the counties themselves who select the projects that they do with the county state aid funds. All we do is make sure that those projects which they plan to do meet standards. Our key measure that we use for our system has to do with the condition of the system. It's similar to MnDOT, and we look at kind of the age of the system as being a proxy for the condition. If What we're trying to do is to keep the system in approximately the same condition they are today. We're just trying to maintain what we have. In order to do that, we should be rebuilding 596 miles of road each year. Right now, we're at about 370, so we are losing some ground. The actual dollars that's involved in this program is on page 54. You will see that there's it shows a direct appropriation of $441 million to the County State Aid Highway Fund. I wanted to point out that that is not all sent directly to the counties. Of that, about 370 goes to the counties through the distribution for maintenance and construction. The 5% that's taken off the top, which we call the flexible fund, also runs through the County State Aid Highway Fund. That was the convenient place to put it first and then move it out. And so that 441 is higher than what the counties themselves would see. That includes the $20 million or so that goes to the town roads. It includes about $11 million that goes to township bridges. It includes $20 million in 2006, which will go to County State Aid Highway Turnback Projects, about $6 million for the Municipal Turnback Project, and then $10 million that then gets moved into the Trunk Highway Fund. Just wanted to make clear that if you're looking at this, the whole 441 does not get sent out to the counties. There's another number on that chart with, under Open Appropriations, which shows as $9 million in 2006. That's the place that funds my office. About $5 million of that supports the work that I do in my office, as well as statewide priorities that the counties themselves might ask us to do. An example that we did in this last fiscal year is we purchased a pavement management van, and we are have agreed to support a couple of people in our materials office so that we will have real-life data of the condition of the county stated highway system for all 30,000 miles that is, or the portion of it that is paved. We have not had that in the past because they all manage their own system, and we worked with the counties and they said we need to have this on a statewide basis so we can have some real data on the condition of our system. And that's where that kind of money would come from that piece of it. In addition, from that $9 million, there's about $1.5 million that goes to research on county and city issues, and then there is about $2.5 million that you've set aside for a park road fund. The DNR selects the projects for that, but they are on local road systems. Some of them are on county state aid, some are on county roads, and some are on townships. But again, it all funnels through the county state aid fund first. And then there's also $130 million that shows under statutory appropriations federal. That's a reflection of all of the federal highway funds that go to local agencies. That's county, cities, and any other kind of unusual agency that's not a trunk highway or county. If there's a historic society or something that gets some for enhancement project, that's included in that $130 million, and it comes through my office first. So that's what we deal with the county system. On page 55, it's a similar program for the municipal state aid system. In this case, it's 9% of the highway user tax distribution fund, and it goes to cities that have a population of 5,000 or more. When this document was prepared, there were 133 of them. Since that time, we now have 136. Chatham, Belle Plaine, and Victoria have all gone over the 5,000 mark and have now a piece of the municipal state aid funds for 2005. We have another four or five that we expect will go over in 2006 or in 2005, so they will share in the apportionment in 2006. I only bring this up, it's to let you know that as growth happens, this money is diluted more and more as more people share in the funds. There's about 3,000 miles at this point of municipal state aid streets. It's only 20% of the mileage in the cities. They can't put all of their city streets on it. They're limited to 20%. And so their 80% of their miles gets no state dollars at all. Their construction projects...
Ms. Cullen, if conversely, if cities fall under 5,000, are they removed from the program?
Madam Chair, that's the intent, yes. We do have one city right now who is under 5,000, the city of Chisholm. They had a special exemption to allow them to continue to participate in it. We're reading the law right now. We think they're going to automatically go off after a year or so. But generally, once they're off, the mileage that they have on their system we work with the county that they're in to then get it put onto their county state aid system. And so the city, while they're not getting any money directly from the MSAS fund, they do benefit from the county collecting money based on the mileage in that municipality. And so they still can expect to have some support for a construction project in that city when it needs to happen.
All right, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Coleman, can you give us a little more information about the special exemption and how that was granted and what process that takes, or did we approve that? Or
that was on list, and that was a line item in an omnibus bill a couple of years ago.
Did that go through this committee, Madam Chair?
Not when I was chair.
To do what?
Any additional questions at this time? Okay, so continue, please.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, Madam Chair, I do have a question.
Representative Earhart.
What are the other 80%? How do the other 80% of city streets get funded? You're only funding 20% of them under the municipal state aid formula. I think it was what your quote. Yeah.
Ms. Gallman.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Earhart. They are funded from property tax dollars, special assessments. Any way that the cities can come up with money, they often will sell bonds and use just generally property taxes to support it.
So the special assessments, property taxes, and bonding.
Yeah. You also can have contributions by developers, businesses, private funds. Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair,
maybe in a shortened term, by hook or by crook?
Would be on new construction, you may get the developers involved. But on maintaining existing, not many developers that are going to...
That's correct. All right. If you'll continue, please.
Okay. Thank you. Similar to the county state aid system, it is the cities themselves who select the construction projects and who perform the maintenance activities on their system. These are selected to improve safety, to relieve congestion, to improve structural capacity, any number of reasons, but they make those decisions based on the needs in their community. Similar to the counties, we look at the age of the system to kind of give us a condition of the system, and again, in order to keep the system in exactly the condition they are today, to prevent it from deteriorating anymore and to protect what we have today, they should be rebuilding 53 miles every year, and they're currently at about 45 miles. And so they are, like the counties, are losing a little bit of ground. To look at the money that's involved in this system, it's page 57. There shows $117 million in 2006. That is the money that is sent directly out to the cities. They have a portion for maintenance where we send them the check, and then there's a portion for construction, which we send after they tell us what project they're going to build with it. So similar program. And then it also shows $2.3 million there, and that is the portion that funds my office. 1.8 of it goes to my office and for some limited statewide kind of activities that the cities might choose to have. And then there's about $600,000 that goes to research. This one's a much cleaner account because we're not running anybody else's money through it. It's directly to the cities. And that's all I intended to say, Madam Chair, unless you have some more questions.
And if I might, Chair, chart on page 57, your 07 recommendations. The open appropriations, why the big increase in that second year?
To the $120 million?
I'm sorry, the forecast, the open appropriation adjustments, you have the 2.3 in 06 and then the 6.1 in 07.
Madam Chair, that is our forecasted growth, what we can expect to see. I'm not privy to the model and how they come up with it. I just spend the money once I get it. So maybe Mr. Gray can answer.
I mean, it seems like a large jump. Mr. Gray?
Madam Chair, we'll follow up on that, but it's not the base funding for the office that has increased by $4 million, I can assure you that. But there, again, through these open appropriations, we do have regular periodic projects and revenue flows that run through. They're really not at the discretion of the agency per se, but we'll get you some breakout on exactly what that $6 million is, similarly for the county side.
All right, thank you. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Ms. Coleman, on the the needs formula in the county state aid highway distribution, are the needs, 25-year needs, still based on 9-ton design, or are you in 10-ton for arterials, or the rest of the roads?
I'm Solomon. Madam Chair, Representative Leader, we do count, go to 10 tons when there's 1,500 or more ADT, but the majority of the roads on the system will be at 9 tons.
And if I might, Ms. Solomon, somebody told me that recently there was a change in the needs formula that allowed any road that had more than 150 average trips was allowed to be put into that system for a 9-ton road status. Is that correct? And if so, when did that happen?
Madam Chair, I have a meeting scheduled with you next week to discuss this in detail. The screening board made the change a year ago, so we're the first effect of the apportionment this year. I am not, at the top of my head, willing to comment on that. I'd like to talk about it
certainly, and we can certainly do that, but I think the committee can expect that we'll have another hearing, at least one, on the formulas and how they're put together and how the needs are put together and how it's working for people in general. And I would think we'd see that hearing after we get through with all our agency presentations and get closer to the time when we'll be putting together our finance bills. Any additional questions? All right. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I think that covers the entire budget over these past 2.5 sessions. So.
All right. Any additional questions for Mr. Gray on the MnDOT budget? Certainly we can call MnDOT back, but this would conclude the budget presentation to the committee for MnDOT. Well, once again, we've been more efficient than we thought we were going to be. We're going to get done early, and today we don't even have any homework to spend with you, so keep in mind tomorrow the joint hearing at 2:30 in this room with policy on the street utility fee bill, and then on Thursday we'll be hearing from DPS and DVS in agency presentations in our regular meeting time. And if there's no other business to come before the committee, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.